Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
The two phrases that always get used in the first week is, it's only one game, and picked up right where they left off. Well, the refs picked up right where they left off, jamming the Saints. The Texans' offensive line picked up right where they left off, picking up Deshaun Watson after he was getting decked repeatedly. In other words, two things that simply cannot keep happening, but are. And of the two, the Texans' pass protection was somehow even worse than the refs. Watson, you might recall, was sacked a league-high 62 times last year, just under four per game. Last night, he was sacked six more times. After being pressured on 41% of his dropbacks last season, he was pressured on 45% of them last night. So, sure, it's only one game. But if that one game is any kind of indication, the Texans' O-line is getting worse, not better. Watson's life is even more at risk now than it was last year. And despite all of that, he still nearly led them to an amazing comeback win. That's how much of a stud this guy is. I mean, seriously. Did you see that throw that he made to DeAndre Hopkins?
Make him throw the ball in front of you.
Goes downfield. And he connects. DeAndre Hopkins has the Texans in business like that.
I mean, a stud. How about that TD to Kenny Stills?
Watson operating out of the gun. Watson throws over the middle. It is caught. Touchdown. Kenny Stills has just burned the Saints. Deshaun Watson is a magician. What a throw and what a rally.
And what a shot he took on that play. Guy takes a tremendous shot and still ends up throwing a perfect pass, a perfect dime. Two plays, 13 seconds on the road in one of the most hostile, loudest joints on earth. Those are the kind of face-melting moments that this guy can give you as long as somebody's not in his face, and even when somebody is. So let me address the Texans personally. You guys have been given a national treasure in Deshaun Watson. Take care of this guy. Protect this guy. The world wants to see a long career from this guy. He's a stud. He's different. He's special. If you can't protect the man and he gets maimed, I'm telling you, I will personally come down there and I will not be happy when I arrive. And I don't root, but that's how much I think of and respect Deshaun Watson. And yes, I know Deshaun Watson is tough as hell. The guy is. We know this. But did you not see what happened to Andrew Luck over the past 4 years? And wasn't the same thing being said about Andrew Luck? He's tough as hell. Did you not see what happened to him the last 4 years? Because the rest of the world did. And the rest of the world knows that if you're lucky enough to get a transcending quarterback, you better do absolutely everything in your power to keep that guy safe. To not do so is practically criminal. And if Watson does get hurt, that's not just a loss for Houston. It's a loss for everybody. Again, he's that special. He's that good. Yeah, but don't worry. Don't worry. New addition, Laremy Tunsil, is on the case.
How many sacks we get today? Six?
Yeah,
see, we gotta make that. We got to improve that number. We got to drop that number down a little bit.
That's funny to me. How would you like to be Deshaun Watson? And you just got blasted the entire game. The defense gives up a horrible drive to lose the game. And you're starting offensive lineman. The guy they brought in to protect you is saying, yeah, six sacks is a little bit too high. We might need to get that number down.
You got to drop that number down a little bit.
We might need to drop that number down a little bit. You think, Laremy? Here's an even better idea. Instead of reducing that number, how about you eliminate that number? Or at least try to eliminate that number. Because it sounds to me like the guy they brought in to shore up the offensive line and to watch your back is saying, we all know six sacks is too many, but, you know, I could probably live with four, maybe five. And as big of a letdown as that Texans offensive line was, what the hell was Houston's defense doing on that final drive? But before I get to the New Orleans Saints and the field goal, why don't we spend a moment on what happened right after the TD to Kenny Stills? Because at that point, that game was still tied at 27. The Texans kicked the extra point to take the lead, right? It's a given, right? Not exactly.
Kaimi Fairbairn. Fairbairn. Oh, he pushed it. No good, but a flag down. 27-27. Penalty marker on the play. Was Fairbairn hit?
Personal foul. Roughing the kicker. Defense number 22.
What a turn of events. Kaimi Fairbairn missed the extra point, but the Saints are called on the penalty.
Well, he missed all right. Was he hit? He was lying on his back. Tie game. Missed point after. Oh, but wait. There is a flag on the play. You know, Saints fans had to love that. This is the same dome where the refs did not throw a flag against the Rams, yet now there's a flag for roughing the kicker. That had to feel pretty good. That had to feel just awesome, especially after the Saints were jammed at the end of the first half with that bizarre clock runoff that started at the wrong time, cost them 15 seconds, and a much better look at a field goal. Now, I'm not going to say that the Saints fans have a point when they say the refs are out to get them, but I can't say that I blame them if they think that. So now they're down 28-27 after the made extra point, and Drew Brees goes to work. 15 yards to Ted Ginn, 11 to Michael Thomas, 9 more to Ted Ginn. That sets up the field goal. But before I roll the field goal, again, one quick question. What the hell were the Texans doing on defense? Defending a Hail Mary? It seemed like half that crew was bailing out and backpedaling when the Saints only needed like 9 yards. And actually, with the way Saints kicker Will Lutz crushed that ball, they didn't need any extra yardage because this guy absolutely smoked it.
58-yard attempt for the win. Snap, placement, Lutz leans into it. Lutz has got the distance. Oh, he's got it! Saints win!
It's a hell of a win for the Saints. A hell of a win for the Saints, even if the refs did not want them to win. Had another bad night while working a Saints game. Despite that, hell of a game. Great game. Awesome game. Hell of a reminder of just how good Drew Brees still is in the clutch. A hell of a reminder of how good Deshaun Watson is and how good he could still be if Houston has any interest in keeping this guy upright. I don't know, Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien, the GM, is going to have a long talk with Bill O'Brien, the head coach, today. Protections and prevent defenses are going to have to be atop that list to address. Coach him up, Billy, because Billy, the GM, cannot help you anymore. He's already traded away half the future for a guy that was supposed to have your quarterbacks back and did not. What do we have, 6 sacks? What do we have, 6 sacks? That might be a little bit too much. We are joined by Carson Palmer. Carson, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you. All right, so a lot to talk about, but why don't we start with last night's game, Houston-New Orleans. Carson, what did you think of the two passes Deshaun Watson threw to move Houston down the field in two plays to get that go-ahead TD?
Absolute seeds. I mean, he got to the right guy at the right time, got hit on both of them, and threw just two perfect balls, really, and walked off the, you know, walked over to the sideline, grabbed some Gatorade, thinking, I'm going to put my hat on, I'm going to put my helmet down, we got this game, it's over. And just like that, three quick Drew Brees passes, and you're walking out of that call, or you're walking out of that stadium with a loss. It's a tough one to swallow. It was a tough position for Houston to be in and for Deshaun Watson to be in, losing week one on the road when you're getting ready to celebrate and party like you want.
Carson Palmer joining us. You know, I'm curious, so what did you think? You know, that's probably what he thought when he came back to the sideline, but you knew Drew Brees was going to get the ball back. You knew he had 37 seconds left on the clock. So what did you make of how he handled that drive? And was there any doubt in your mind that he would get them into position for a field goal?
Not very much doubt. I mean, 37 seconds with one timeout is not ideal, especially when you're putting a 58-yarder on your field goal kicker. But I mean, Drew Brees has done it time and time again. He's not showing any signs of slowing down. And I thought the most impressive, one of the most impressive parts of that game, other than Deshaun Watson, was Alvin Kamara. I mean, he is so much fun to watch. He is so explosive and so good in the pass game and the run game. Drew's got him. He's got Michael. You know, he's got all these guys around him, a ton of talent. So it's going to be a fun year to watch the Saints on offense.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more. I thought Kamara was amazing last night. Not that we didn't see anything that we haven't seen from him in the past, but I thought the guy was amazing. And Drew's got so many weapons to work with. Are you craving some protein after a good workout? Do not make a shake or eat a bar. Grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. And it goes wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality that you're buying and look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Carson Palmer is joining us. So, Carson, moving along, you know, you don't pay a guy off of only one game, but when you see what Dak Prescott did against the Giants, how good did he look to you?
He was flawless. Every aspect of his game. You saw him do some audibleizing at the line of scrimmage and have success in the next play. He threw the ball with touch down the field. He threw the ball with velocity. He threw it accurately. Mechanically, he was extremely sound. He was on balance. He was throwing off a platform. Really, really great way to see him start the season. And they have a ton of talent around him and a great group of offensive linemen in front of him. But I mean, the way he feathered the ball with touch and put the ball right where it needed to be on a couple of deep passes, especially that one to Amari Cooper down the left sideline where he really couldn't stretch him out. He had to get the ball up and down before he caught the ball and ran out of the back of the end zone. I mean, he really showed you every facet of his game is firing on all cylinders in week one.
Carson Palmer is joining us. He appears courtesy of FedEx Air and Ground NFL program. Carson, obviously you and I have talked about Tom Brady in the past, but again, I don't know how to phrase this any differently, but how impressed were you with the way he showed up on Sunday night? He completes 2/3 of his passes for nearly 350 yards and 3 touchdowns. What were your thoughts upon his performance Sunday?
It just looked so easy. I mean, it was just such a ho-hum Sunday night opener at home, revealing the banner, celebrating last year's championship. Been there before, done it a bunch of times. It just looks so fluid and easy, and he's 42 years old, and everybody thinks he's too old. I mean, it was just one of those games where he came out and shut everybody up, and now everybody's saying, oh, the Patriots are the team to beat. So it was really fun to watch, and he's still doing it, you know, at 42 years old with more talent around him than maybe he's ever had in his career.
All right, so how do you like the fit of Antonio Brown with the Patriots, and how do you think that will go?
I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I think Antonio Brown is a perfect receiver for Ben Roethlisberger. Ben's going to move in the pocket, buy some extra time, let Antonio run a curl, and then shake himself open and take off and streak down the sideline for a touchdown. I mean, that is what AB is, and that is what makes Roethlisberger so great. So for AB to come into a system where he's got to be precise, he's got to be in the exact spot right when Brady needs him there. And all Brady's receivers, you know, throughout his career have been precision, guys he can count on to be exactly where he expects them to be. AB is not that guy. AB sometimes runs a route 10 yards, sometimes he runs it at 14 yards, sometimes he delay release, sometimes he speed releases. So I don't like the mesh and the fit of those two players together. And I also want to see what happens when, you know, Antonio Brown only has 3 or 4 targets in week 5 and then only 2 or 3 targets in week 8. And starts realizing he may not be hitting all these incentives he needs to hit to get that extra $5 million. So I just don't like the mesh. I don't like the fit. And I think it's going to end ugly for AB. It's not going to end ugly for New England. They're still going to go out and do their thing. But I think AB's going to maybe be out of there before the season ends.
Carson Palmer joining us. He's appearing courtesy of FedEx Air and Ground NFL program. You know, when you take a step back and you look at your playing career, as everybody knows, you played with some really big personalities at wide receiver as well. When you were playing with Chad Johnson and later Chad Ochocinco, what was he like when it came to going to meetings, coming to the facility, and all the details, the important details like that?
He was there every day, showed up to work, ran every route for the starting offense, and then when the starting defense would go up against the scout team offense, he would pull the scout team receivers out and he would jump in and run their routes for them. So he was always working, always grinding, worked harder than probably any other receiver in the league. And that's what made his game so great, is it carried over from Wednesday's practice, Thursday's practice, and on into Sunday. In every meeting, I mean, I'm sure he was late for a handful of meetings here and there, but he showed up to work. He showed up to work, and he showed up to outwork everybody on our team and every other team. But this stuff that Antonio Brown's done is unbelievable. I mean, it's one thing after another, and he's that's the new diva receiver. Chad looks like a dream compared to what AB's been pulling.
Carson Palmer joining us. You know, for the past few weeks, the topic of Andrew Luck keeps coming up, Carson. And when I talk to guys who played the game for a long time in that league, they know, they understand the physical and mental pain that Luck was going through. What did you think when you watched him announce his retirement?
I thought it came from the heart, and it was organic. And he got up there with probably a number of things he wanted to say, and he just opened up his heart and spoke his mind. I get it. I understand why people don't understand it, but I get it. Being a guy that is all about team and all about work and all about being together and grind and, all the things that go into building a team and going throughout a season, when you're not able to do that and you're not playing and it gets to Sunday and you're staying on the sideline in a T-shirt and shorts while everybody else is suited up in uniforms, it takes an emotional toll, especially if you're a guy like Andrew who just loves his teammates and loves being there and loves being accountable. When you can't be there, you feel like, a waste of space, a waste of salary cap space, a waste of a locker in the locker room. You know, it's tough to process when it happens year after year after year. And I think the toughest thing watching Andrew, because I'm a big fan, I thought he was an unbelievable player, but the toughest thing was watching those first 3 years. He got sacked 30 times a year in his first 3 years. So that took a physical toll on him. You can't expect your franchise player to go out there and play with, a bunch of sixth and seventh round and free agent offensive linemen. They needed to build that around him, and they didn't. And his body, his body took a beating in those, 100 sacks in year 1 to 3 is far too many sacks for any quarterback to take. And unfortunately, I think it led him into this spot that he's in now, where he just physically can't get healthy and can't get right again.
All right, so to that point then, if you see Deshaun Watson, and I think he's another kind of special kind of player, if he gets sacked 62 times last year, he's already had that one ACL injury, and he got sacked 6 more times last night, how concerned are you?
Very, very. I mean, it takes its toll on your body. And when you're young, you think, it's not that bad, I'll bounce back. And by the time you get to Wednesday's practice and Thursday's practice, your body starts to feel good again. But when you're 28, 29, and 30, that all changes. It's all delayed. You have another couple days of recovery in order to, for you to feel good enough to go in and play on a Sunday. And they know the issue. I mean, the stats don't lie. There's a reason they traded for Laremy Tunsil and started him on Monday Night Football when he just got to Houston 5 days prior. So it's obviously an area of concern. Bill O'Brien's trying to do what he can about it, but it's hard. It takes years to build up an offensive line group, and they're trying to do that really in one off season right now. And it's nowhere near where it needs to be.
Got a few more minutes with Carson Palmer. Now, over the summer, the Cardinals and Michael Bidwill FaceTimed you and told you that they want you to be a member of the Ring of Honor at the stadium. It's a ceremony which is going to take place on September 29th. What does the honor mean to you, and what kind of emotions do you expect to be feeling on that big day?
Tremendous honor. I mean, it was such a great time in my career and played with so many great guys. Great friends, played for unbelievable coaches. Obviously, Michael Bidwill, Steve Keim, our GM. It's a tremendous honor, and my whole family is going to be there, and we're going to celebrate it. And I can't wait for that weekend. And being a part of, the oldest franchise in NFL history, and putting your name up there on inside the stadium is something that they can't take away from you ever. And it's just such a tremendous honor for me.
Has there ever been a worse transition than going from the epic high of that final minute in New Orleans to Joe Flacco handing the ball to a tight end on a running play and throwing dump-off passes on a baseball field? What an amazing buzzkill. The ultimate record scratch. Is there a bigger cooler in the NFL than Flacco?
Hey!
Hey! I mean, what about this guy? I thought that Flacco was supposed to be the perfect fit for that offense. that John Elway had finally solved his quarterback problem, that Flacco was going to turn back the clock. Hey, none of that happened because
Thank
Joe Flacco
Thank you.
Is still Joe Flacco. And as I tweeted last night, Joe Flacco, still not elite. Yeah, I know. It's only one game. It's only one game, but Lamar Jackson is tearing it up right now. Joe Flacco picked up right where he left off right now. You see that last night, and you see Lamar Jackson on Sunday. And again, I know that he did it against a team that barely is in the NFL. I don't really care. You see what Lamar Jackson did Sunday, and you have to think, was there even an actual quarterback battle? How'd that happen? Flacco and Jackson. But that wasn't all about Joe Flacco, because the Broncos were not only lousy under center, they were lousy in all phases of the game. I thought that defense was supposed to go off with the arrival of Vic Fangio. That defense was getting gashed. Von Miller and Bradley Chubb not only did not have a sack, they weren't even credited with a hit. The Raider offensive line bullied them. And another thing.
And you know,
it's time to give the Raiders a little bit of love. It's time to give them a little love because they earned it. That was an impressive performance from that crew. They had one of the most chaotic off seasons you could ever imagine. The kind of mess that you couldn't actually create even if you tried. And nobody looked worse as a result of that mess than Chunk Gruden. But as I did say on this show yesterday, if John Gruden wants to change the narrative, if Gruden wants to change the subject from how horrible he looked over the Antonio Brown situation, he better win, and he did last night. And don't let the scoreboard fool you. It said 24-16, but that game was never that close. Never that close. The Raiders went right down the field on their first drive, and they never looked back the rest of the game. That was actually one of their better performances in years. It looked like Antonio Brown leaving was the best thing that ever happened to them. In fact, seeing that, why didn't they dump him earlier? Because they were galvanized and getting after it on both sides of the ball. And so was the black hole. So was the crowd, which was chanting, bleep AB, bleep AB, throughout the entire game. So perfect, so on brand, so black hole, so Oakland Raiders, and I have to admit, so funny. Derek Carr didn't look like he missed Brown. Derek Carr was 22 of 26 for 269 yards and a touchdown. That was 2016 Derek Carr. And the defense was swarming and getting after it. Oh, and the crowd? The crowd was still chanting, bleep AB, bleep AB. So the obvious question, are the Raiders really this good? Or are the Broncos really that bad? And does Raider fan really hate AB as much as that? And a reminder, it's only one game. It's only one game, but all that off-season hype about the Broncos went right down the drain. All that talk about that defense and how it was going to dominate. All that talk about Joe Flacco. All of that vanished in a cloud of infield dirt. Speaking of the infield dirt, man, I'm going to miss that so much. I'm going to miss that infield when the Raiders bust out of Oakland. Nothing says September football better than watching somebody get lit up on a crossing route in deep short. I'm not sure I've ever seen anybody, not just in the NFL, but in any walk of life, more miserable than NFLers playing on that infield dirt. And for good reason. I mean, what do I know? I've never played on it. But take it from somebody who has. Justin Forsett. He tweeted last night, quote, "If anyone wants to know what it feels like to fall on that dirt in Oakland Coliseum, Go outside right now. Sprint as fast as you can in the middle of the street. Once you get to full speed, jump up as high as you can and belly flop on the pavement. Hashtag facts. Yeah, I mean, I see it working, Jay, but I'm still going to miss that infield. If the Raiders want to do this right, they'll bring the infield dirt with them to Vegas. Then they'll dial it up a notch by keeping the bases on the field as well. Then they'll chalk up the lines, and they'll still hold post-game pressers in the A's indoor batting cage. Because, and after the preseason circus that this crew organized, I never thought that I would say this, but last night was special. I mean, it was. Las Vegas is going to have a nicer stadium than Oakland. We know this. Hell, Winnipeg and that 80-yard field had a nicer stadium than Oakland. But if it doesn't have the infield, or the bases, or the baselines, or the batting cages, or the black hole, it's not going to be the same. And trust me, it will not be better. Only newer, but not better. If I'm Mark Davis, I would immediately cease construction in Las Vegas. I'd roll that minivan right over to P.F. Chang's. I'd post up there. I'd break out my flip phone. I'd schedule my next ginger bowl cut at the barber and start banking W's, because last night was the best that team has looked in years. In years. Quick question for y'all. If you found a C-note, a $100 bill on the street, would you pick it up or would you just walk right on by? Of course you take the money. So why do you keep picking winners but you don't bet on them? This is why I go to MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay when you win. Let's face it, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. You know me, right? I would not be telling you guys to bet with them if they were not the best. Now do the smart thing. If you're going to bet football this season, bet with MyBookie. Did you know that you could bet on games after kickoff? If by the second half it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always just go the other way. And if you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little but win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of year. Join right now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use the promo code Rome to activate that awesome offer. That's promo code Rome. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Will Brinson. Alvin, why don't you bring that up for me? Hey, Will, what's up?
Jim, what's going on, buddy? Hope you're doing well.
Good. I'm doing great, Will. I hope you are, too. It's good to have you back. Let me ask you this. Carson Palmer, Will, was my first guest today. You're now following him. How do you feel about being in that spot in this lineup?
Petrified. Carson Palmer, met him at the Super Bowl briefly, did an interview with him, and he's hilarious, has great takes, and seems like the most, like, I don't know, he projects this like crazy calm energy, and it makes me more nervous, which I don't need to be any more nervous than I am in general life.
That's great. He is like that. He and his brother, man, they're both so bright. They are so sharp. I'm not at all surprised that they've had the kind of success they have. So I agree with you. Now, listen, he was raving about Dak Prescott and what Prescott did Sunday against the Giants. How much do you think that that performance, albeit one game, but how much do you think that performance will impact contract talks?
I think it has a huge impact. I mean, let's not act like, I mean, Jerry Jones is a savvy businessman, but he is also very clearly a bit of a prisoner of the moment when it comes to the Cowboys. He is like a fan. I mean, he treats each game as life or death. He tends to overreact a little bit when the Cowboys look terrible, and he understands that he has a fleeting window with which to win. I also believe he looks at Dak Prescott, Jim, as this diamond in the rough that he plucked out of the draft, and even as much as he loves Tony Romo and as much as he loves Troy Aikman, like, Dak is sort of the modern age guy that he found without the help of a Parcells or a Peyton or obviously a Jimmy Johnson. So to me, Dak is like, he puts Dak on a pedestal. He's always wanted to pay him. but he's also a smart, savvy business guy, and he's going to try and lowball him as much as he can. But when Dak goes out there and starts dropping fire dimes 40 yards down the field and uncorking in this new offense that Kellen Moore's cooked up, and Michael Gallup looks great, and Amari Cooper looks great, and Randall Cobb looks great, and they're throttling the Giants, I can't help but think that Jerry sees that and understands that, you know, it's time to pay Dak Prescott. And if I'm Dak Prescott, I'm not signing a contract this year. I'm going to play out the season of this offense that fits me perfectly. I'm going to make him give me $40 million at the end of this offseason.
Will Brinson joining us. Interesting thought. You mentioned Kellen Moore. You know, it's only one game, but how different does this offense feel with Kellen Moore as the offensive coordinator instead of Scott Linehan?
Yeah, I think the biggest stat that really took me, you know, aback, Jim, was at halftime of that game against the Giants. And look, just like with the Ravens and the Dolphins, we got to caveat it that the Giants stink. Their defense is terrible. But when you look at halftime, Dak Prescott had 26 passing attempts and Zeke Elliott had 26 rushing yards. That's not the approach we've seen from the Cowboys in recent years. Typically, they like to hashtag establish the run and try and be physical up front and to pound Zeke and then let Dak, you know, work off of that. And it oftentimes ends up with him in third and long, difficult situations for any quarterback and certainly a young quarterback. And what we saw from the Cowboys on Sunday was a willingness to throw on early downs and a willingness to use play action without even having established the run. And not to nerd out, but analytics tell us that play action is the most effective play call you could have in football because it, you know, sucks in the defense. It just, you know, changes the options available to you, and it gives you the advantage schematically ahead of the defense. Additionally, throwing on early downs puts you in advantageous opportunities to convert third and short. And the other thing that I thought Kellen Moore had Dak Prescott do was throw deep. Our colleague Jared Dubin at CBS Sports pointed out that in the time under Scott Linehan, Dak Prescott threw deep 9.3% of the time, right? That's not a ton. On Sunday against the Giants in Kellen Moore's first game, he threw deep 18.8% of the time. They were throwing strikes down the field. It's a strength of Dak. You can let him throw deep to these great receivers, Gallup, Cooper, and then have Cobb work the underneath. And then the one other thing I'll add, too, is that touchdown to Jason Witten, the old Cowboys would have run Zeke off tackle to the left three straight times, and then we would have, you know, complained on Twitter about Jason Garrett's decision to kick a field goal on fourth and short. Instead, they run play action on first down, leak out Jason Witten, easy touchdown. Very smart game plan from the Cowboys.
Will Brinson, senior NFL writer at CBS Sports, is joining us. All right, so different topic. If you're a Texans fan, Will, what worries you more about last night? How Houston's offensive line played over the course of that game, how their defense played in the final drive, or how Bill O'Brien calls plays?
Yes. I think all three are a big problem, Jim. And I would say that while that prevent defense business from Romeo Crennel is a major red flag, I mean, that you just can't be doing that. And if you look at the games that this team has lost late, even with Deshaun Watson at quarterback, they've come because they play prevent defense. They get conservative. Bill O'Brien loves nothing more than to run a B-list running back for 3 yards into the line of scrimmage over and over again. But by far the biggest concern for me is Deshaun Watson's health. I mean, this is a guy who looks like he could be the best quarterback in football. And that's saying a lot with Patrick Mahomes out there and Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady and all these guys. But I mean, Deshaun Watson, when he's on, he is on. And we know he can win at the highest level. We know he can win on the biggest stage. I don't think there are many, many guys in sports. I mean, Dabo might have been right about this when he compared him to Jordan. I don't think there are many guys in sports who are more clutch and cold-blooded than Deshaun Watson, who can go toe-to-toe with the best. We've seen him do it. But he's not going to play 16 games at this pace. He can't take these hits. You can't run him in the red zone. You can't utilize his legs every time you need to be bailed out. And you certainly can't give away 2 first-round draft picks for one offensive lineman and expect that to solve everything. If Deshaun Watson, as he has previously, goes down with a major injury and misses part of the season or a large chunk of the season, the Texans are going to hand over a top 10 pick to the Miami Dolphins, and it's going to set their franchise back even further.
Will Brinson is joining us once again. Will, if you're a Saints fan, at this point, are you pretty much convinced that the refs are looking to jam you at every possible turn?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't understand how I mean, I understand how we could maybe mess up if we're talking about the referees in the Saints game. Like, even a nuanced subjective call like pass interference or, roughing the passer, et cetera, et cetera. How can you mess up time? I mean, it's the clock. There was one game on TV, and you have Al River on, who knows that he's under fire from the NFL, from fans, from owners, from coaches, because they botched that PI call in the NFC Championship game, and they had to completely overhaul this process for replay and challenges and all of that. And you're going to somehow let the Saints, in their own house, lose 16 seconds at the end of the first half because you can't manage a clock? Who's watching the gate here? I mean, who is in charge in New York that allowed this to happen, where somebody didn't stand up and say, wait a minute, guys, we just cost them 26 seconds. It's unfathomable to me, especially when you talk about a $14 billion business.
We are talking to Will Brinson. All right, Will, let me ask you this. You went all in on the Vikings in the NFC before the start of the season. I'll get to that in a second. But you also went hard for Vic Fangio and the Broncos in the AFC West. How are you feeling about that prediction after last night?
Well, I mean, I didn't feel good about it on Sunday when the Chargers and Phillip Rivers look awesome. You know, look, I betrayed Phillip Rivers, Jim, so that's on me. I mean, this is a clear-cut Judas situation, and I got to own it.
Right.
Look, betting against Patrick Mahomes, maybe not, and Andy Reid, maybe not smart. So I'm petrified. Joe Flacco was under fire from what we thought was a bad Raiders defense, and Bradley Chubb and Von Miller got stonewalled by Trent Brown and company on that Raiders offensive line. Derek Carr, you know, didn't throw deep because he doesn't throw deep, but he completed a bunch of his passes and got praised for it on the telecast. I am going to give a little bit of – I'm going to chalk it up a little bit to, like, the FAB syndrome in Oakland, which we heard from the fans and I think pervaded the locker room there. I believe that they wanted to go out and prove something after Antonio Brown ditched them for New England. So I think those crazy late Monday games are you don't want to read too much into it. But, yeah, I'm absolutely petrified of my pick, and I would change it in a heartbeat if I could.
Will Brinson joining me once again for a few more moments. All right, so what about Antonio Brown? When you look at what the Patriots have in terms of receiving targets and the way they like to spread the ball around, how do you see AB fitting into all of this? And, Will, more importantly, maybe, how do you see his contract incentives fitting into all this?
Yeah, I think the way that the Patriots structured this is really interesting, Jim. So he gets $5 million up front, and then he's going to get the rest of his signing bonus, the $4 million later. I mean, like, ipso facto, that tells you that Bill Belichick is not willing to fully commit to Antonio Brown being on the team, and he wants to dangle a carrot as best he can. Same thing with the $1.5 million incentives, you know, the yards, the catches, and the touchdowns. They're not likely to be met, but it's certainly reasonable if he's playing really well. And I think I'd be curious to see how he fits in and what they do in Miami, because on one hand, you need to – I don't think Bill Belichick wants to go down there and just cream his old defensive coordinator, Brian Flores. He seems to take it kind of easy on his former coaches. On the other hand, you got to go down there and make sure AB's happy with his role in this offense. Is he going to be cool if he's getting 5 or 6 targets, even if he ends up catching a touchdown and has 70 yards a game? I don't know. I mean, that's not something that the AB we have known over the last 5 years would be okay with. Maybe he goes full Randy Moss. Bill Belichick referenced Randy Moss when talking about Antonio Brown today. So maybe he changes his tune, and because New England has that magic voodoo, they work. But I have a hard time fully committing to the notion that Antonio Brown will be a good soldier and be playing for the Patriots happily in week 17. We've just seen too much over the last 6 months for me to buy into that.
Hey, Will, I'm not any kind of full-blown degenerate, but I'm really curious where you come out on this, since you mentioned what Belichick might do to a former assistant coach. Like, that line, I think, kind of popped at like 15.5 when it dropped, and then it moved quickly to 18 or 18.5. Do you think that Belichick would call off the dogs before it got to that point, or is he going to get up there 3 or 4 touchdowns before he calls off the dogs?
It's at 18.5 now, and there's some people who think it could get to 21. As high as 21, Jim, which is, you can't lay 21 points. If you are a degenerate listening to this and you see 21, you're getting the worst of the number. Just walk away from it. I think the play actually here is to take the under, and this ties in with what the Patriots will do, in my opinion. The Patriots, since 2008, 10-0 to the under when they're double-digit favorites on the road. That's pretty incredible. What it tells you is that Bill Belichick has a plan in place when he goes on the road against a clearly inferior team. It's to throw early, get a lead, and then just suffocate with defense and run the heck out of the football, shorten the game, get out of Dodge with a W, and don't make a big deal out of it. And I really think we're going to see that from the Patriots this week. I don't see how Ryan Fitzpatrick and that Dolphins offense, like Devontae Parker and Mike Gesicki, Kenyon Drake, are going to score points against a secondary that we saw is as good as it is in what they did with the Steelers on Sunday night. I like the under here. I would just – it's just a – walk away from that Patriots line.
So how many points would you lay?
I would lay 15 for sure. I mean, 15 to 17, I think, would be fine. 18 and a half is just getting out of control.
I got you. CBS Sports senior writer, also host of the Pick 6 NFL podcast, good friend of the program. And as I mentioned, he hosted about a billion emergency podcasts last week, stepping up when he had to. Will Brinson, my guest. Good job, Will. Thank you so much.
Always fun, Jim. Have a great day, man.
Bobby Petrino. How about this? Bobby P. How about Bobby? How about Bobbo? How about Bob? How about B? Now, before there was Hugh Freeze and his hospital bed / dental chair, there was Bobby Petrino and his motorcycle and his neck brace and his face, or what was left of it, and the pavement. In other words, the freaking GOAT. Y'all remember that? Who would ever forget it? Who would ever want to forget it? Anyway, old Bobbo was back at the scene of his freakery in Arkansas yesterday at the Little Rock Touchdown Club. And it was a hell of a scene, yo. According to reports, it was a sold-out event. Sold out of 700. And the tickets were gone in 24 hours. Pretty awesome. A sold-out crowd. Tickets gone in less than a day. Is this Bobby Petrino or Metallica? Bruce Springsteen or Bobby P? Then again, Petrino is the boss. And it was everything that I would have hoped it would be. I got everything that I wanted and everything that I needed out of that, including the long-awaited apology from Petrino.
You know, when I was contacted about coming here, I immediately shocked Frank when he called me, and I said, yeah, I'd love to. And I've had a lot of people ask me, you know, about it, but I wanted to be able to come here and apologize to everybody, the fans, the players, and truly tell you how sorry I am for the way it ended. But I also wanted to come here to thank you for everything that people in this room and in the state did for me and my family. You were great to us.
Now, if it seemed like that applause went on for a pretty long period of time, it's because it did. That turned into a standing ovation. So you heard that somewhat heartfelt apology. My man, did you also apologize to the pavement for leaving half your face on it? What an incredible moment for a legend who has given us so many incredible moments. Like when he bailed on the Atlanta Falcons for the Arkansas Razorbacks and did it in the middle of the season. And did it by leaving notes in his players' lockers. He really did that. He quit on his team in the middle of an NFL season and did not address them, but left notes on their lockers. That happened. Also, remember when he got into that motorcycle accident that ended his time in Arkansas? The time that started when he quit the Atlanta Falcons by leaving notes on their locker. You remember, he shredded his face and the Razorback dreams, and yet somehow, miraculously, is able to return to a sold-out touchdown club and a standing ovation. It does not get any better than that. Actually, it does. Because if you recall how he left Arkansas in the first place, It does get better than that. If you remember, he was canned back in 2012, and it was not because he was losing games. It was because he lost control of his hog, his motorcycle, on a road in rural Madison County, and in fact shredded his face on the concrete. He then showed up at a press conference in a neck brace with one of the most hilarious cases of road rash ever. And when asked if he was alone on that motorcycle, he said he was. Turns out he was not. Nope. Bobby Petrino, married father of four, had his mistress, a former volleyball player with whom he was having an affair, and then hired and paid on the back of that bike and try to cover it up. As always, the cover-up is worse than the crime itself. Always. Always. Especially when the cover-up involves your mistress and a former volleyball player on the back of the hog that you laid down and left half your face on the gravel. Because that's something that you can do, right? You can't just hide a person who was on the back of a motorcycle in an accident and then show up at a press conference with a neck brace and severe burns to the face and think that everybody's going to be good with that. Look, I understand these guys get over and they get over and they get over and they get over. And if they win a lot of games, they really get over. But he thought he was going to get over on that, cover that up. Man, this cat was so incredible. He even spent time at the presser talking about what he had been doing before the accident. And according to him, he was at Beaver Lake with his wife, Becky, and they discussed whether or not he should wear a helmet. Quote, he literally was selling this. Quote, the ironic thing is we were sitting there in the kitchen, Becky and I have two helmets out. And I say, this one is really going to be heavy and hot, and this one makes me look like a cone head. I think I'll just go with the hat. End quote. Good call, Bob. Wearing the helmet makes you look like a cone head. Yeah, but shredding your face is a much better look. Shredding your face and showing up with a big-ass neck brace is so much better than looking like a cone head. And while he did not put the helmet on his head, he did put it on his mistress on the bike. Then he lied about that to his employers and only came correct when the cops and the police report were about to come out. Then he got fired, which is absolutely awesome. The guy leaves half his face and all of his mistress on the pavement in Arkansas, lies about it, gets fired, and then comes back a few years later to a standing ovation. It's absolutely amazing. And if you think that I'm using this as an opportunity to reset and revisit those legendary photos of him at the presser where his face is as bright as his Arkansas jacket, you're wrong. No, I'm resetting this so I can bring back one of the best quotes in the history of sports. No, one of the best quotes in the history of life. Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer, who was Petrino's D coordinator in Atlanta. Do you remember that? Do you also remember what he said at the time? He told the Cincinnati Inquirer back in 2010 that Petrino is, quote, this is great, this is a guy who worked for Petrino, quote, Petrino is, quote, a gutless bastard. Quote that. I don't give a bleep. When told that the paper could not print the word bastard, Zimmer said, quote, how about this? Gutless MF-er. You can use that. End quote. That might be the best quote ever. Told that he can't say gutless bastard in the paper, Zim goes, all right, how about gutless MF-er? And he's not wrong. But that has not stopped Bobby Petrino from being Bobby Petrino or stopped people from giving Bobby Petrino standing ovations. And if you're looking for another moral to another story, it's this. It's not how many times you fall off that bike with your mistress attached. It's how many times you get back up. And if you get back up, you and what's left of your face are going to get a standing ovation. The question is not why Arkansas invited this guy back, but why they didn't do it sooner. Hell, the way they're acting, you wonder how this guy even got fired in the first place. He should run this whole thing back again today, only this time ride into the TD Club on his hog, rocking that big-ass plastic neck brace with half his face scraped off. Because it'll never, ever get better than that. Just ask Arkansas fan. They can't get enough of it. They love him for it. I had Warrick Dunn on way back in the day. Warrick Dunn, who was an Atlanta Falcon. And I asked him what he thought of Bobby P.
The biggest problem for us was Bobby Petrino. He just wasn't a good guy. You can't, for 6 months, tell guys to buy into your system, to believe in what you're believing in, but you're doing everything to hold up your end. And he didn't do that. To leave us a letter in our locker when he decided to leave, that was just disrespectful. You don't play a game on Monday night and leave the next day. To me, that just says, you know what, I didn't care about this thing anyway.
Warrick Dunn. He goes, the biggest problem we had was Bobby Petrino. That just was not a good guy. You know, Warrick Dunn's like the best guy. I can't tell you how many times over the years I interviewed Warrick Dunn. And he was one of those guys. He was such a good ball player, such a good dude, such a good teammate, such a good leader, making still such a big difference in the community. I love Warrick Dunn. And he kept getting better and better and better as an interview over time. He's really shy. When I first started interviewing him at Florida State, and he got better and better and better. I mean, a really good guy. But I never heard him as emphatic about anything as he was when that topic came up. Casey Hayward is my guest. Casey, it's good to have you on. How are you?
Man, I'm doing good, man. Thank you all for having me on.
Good to have you on. All right, so before we get into week one and your preparation for the Lions, yesterday was your birthday. Are you a big birthday guy? How was that big day? How'd you go about celebrating it?
I'm not a big birthday guy, but I had some family or friends come in and they were in the middle of a surprise birthday party after the game, so it was pretty dope to have my friends and family here trying to surprise me and things like that. So I'm not a big birthday guy, but I celebrate life. So that not many people, everybody don't get to see 30, so I celebrate.
That's a good answer. I like that. And anytime they can pull off a surprise, that's a win. Speaking of wins, every win in the NFL, you know how hard it is to win week to week. I don't care what that cliche is. It's true. Every win in the NFL is special, but how good does it feel to start the season with an overtime win over a very good Colts team?
That one felt really good. After the game, that's what we talk about. It's hard to win in this league. So anytime you can win a game, you know, celebrate it and try to move on. But it was a hard, tough-fought game. They have a good team, good defense. They got some really good players on offense as well. But we figured it out and found a way to win. And I feel like in the NFL, we have to find a way to win those close games.
Casey Hayward's joining us. Now, you had tweeted during the offseason about how much you missed the game day feeling. For those who are listening who will never get the chance to run out of a tunnel on game day, in other words, pretty much all of us, how would you describe that? What does that moment feel like?
Oh, man, it feels surreal. We kind of do it a little different here. I'm pretty sure in the new stadium it would be a little different, but we kind of come out as a team. I remember those days when I was coming out as a pack, and they call your name on the starting lineup, you're running through the tunnel, clapping everybody's hand. That was just a surreal feel, and some feel that you'll never forget it. I almost feel like going back to college and playing Little League where, you know, it feels like you're just out there playing for the joy of the game.
That's cool. L.A. Charger, Casey Hayward's joining us. So when Sunday's game goes to overtime, the offense gets the ball. They go right down the field, 75 yards in over 5 minutes. Austin Eckler capped it off with a 7-yard run. What was it like for you to be on the sideline watching the offense go to work like it did?
It was cool. I know once we won the toss, we was going to win that game. Just seeing how the offense had been marching up and down the field in that second half, even before the drive before that, we threw the interception in the end zone. They drove the ball up and down the field all game. So we knew we had a chance to win that game. And I was telling the guys on the sideline, like, don't worry, don't even grab your helmet. We're going to end this game here.
In case you hear, we're joining us. Now, there's also a story from that game where after Philip Rivers went out of bounds on the final play of regulation, Colts players were yelling, "It's over, it's over." The story goes that Rivers then gathered guys on the sideline together before overtime and gave a speech. Like, knowing how competitive Philip Rivers is, how weird is it that at this juncture of his career especially, that an opponent's going to try and talk trash to him?
I couldn't catch the end of it. Say that again for me.
How weird is it the guys are trying to talk trash to Philip Rivers when the Colts were saying, it's over, when he went out of bounds on that final play of regulation? I mean, don't they know better? How weird is that?
Man, you know, that kind of motivates everybody. It's not over until it's over. I think that was the guys were just so happy to be into overtime. That was a game that they shouldn't have been in at that moment. We had a chance to stop them on 3rd and 22. You know what I mean? So those guys were just happy to be in that moment. But we knew we got one of those leaders in our team and our quarterback, and that's what you need to have, one of those leaders at the quarterback. And we felt like we was gonna win the game. As long as we got 17 back there, we got a chance to win that game.
Chargers cornerback Casey Hayward is joining us. Now, Eckler had a big game with more than 150 yards from scrimmage. He had 3 touchdowns. Look, you know a lot of people are going to want to make this about Melvin Gordon v. Austin Eckler. I'm going to leave that out of it. But let me ask you this. How good is Eckler?
Oh, man, he's legit. He's really good. He's a really good back in this league. He runs the ball hard. I think what he does best, you know, he's more like a McCaffrey. He catches the ball out of the backfield. And he makes people miss. And he's a special guy. And if you've been watching him for the last couple of years, he's been doing the same thing. And I definitely think with him and Melvin and JJ, they complement each other so well. One guy, a big guy, bruiser. The other guy, it's the same. You know what I mean? He's fast guy out of the backfield, but he still makes a lot of people miss. And I feel like once we get Melvin back, it'll be a great complement to each other. And hopefully we can, you know, our offense will be even more deadly when Melvin gets back.
Austin, do you think that Melvin is coming back? And if so, when do you think that might be?
I hope he comes back. I hope he comes back next week. I doubt it, but I'm not sure when he's going to come back. I hope he's come back soon because I think we got a chance to be a special team. And I feel like that's another piece that we can have on the offensive side, you know, that because Melvin is a special player. He's one of the top running backs in this league, so we don't want to get that confused, you know, or take away from what Eckler has been doing. But we'd definitely love to have Melvin back because he's such a special player as well.
Casey Hayward joining us for a few more moments. Now, the thing is, when you look at the secondary, one of the things you talked about in camp is that you expect the secondary, a.k.a. the Jack Boys, to get back to coming up with interceptions. Let me ask you this. How much of interceptions is about luck and how much of it is about skill?
It's probably a little 50-50. You got to be in the right spots. You know what I mean? You got to be in the right spots a lot of the times. And hopefully you can get some tip balls and some overthrows where, you know, the ball just, you know, finds you. Like I watched some of the San Fran game. On some of those balls that those guys got interception, the ball just finds them. And that's what it's about, being in the right spot. So people can call it luck, but if you've been in the right spot a lot of the times, and I would love to have 3 or 4 tip balls a year on interception. So I don't be mad when people get them.
Yeah, right? Of course. See, like, you led the league in picks in 2016, but you didn't have any last year because quarterbacks are not throwing your way. So how do you go about dealing with that? For instance, do you take it as a sign of respect, or is there a part of you that's like, come on, man, I can't make a play if you don't throw it my way?
Both. Last year, I was, you know, one of the least targeted guys last year, but I still got to find a way to, you know, to make an impact on the game. And no matter that, you know, getting turnovers, forced, you know, interceptions, fumble recoveries, or just, you know, limiting their guys from catching the ball, I do it at all aspects. So for me, it's all about wins, and if we can win and I'm getting interceptions, great. If we win and I'm not, I'm still okay with it. Of course, I want to get turnovers and things like that, but it's all about winning in this league.
Hey, Casey, one more thing about the secondary. You're playing without Derwin James at the moment. I know you're not going to make any excuses, but for those who don't fully appreciate him and his game or don't know any different, when you look at his versatility, how special is he?
He's special. Special, special. I remember the first day we seen him at pad. He looks bigger than everybody else. He's like, yo, who is this guy? He looks so much bigger, but he's such a great guy. So anytime you can have somebody go down with an injury like that, you know, it sucks because he's one of those players that generational, I feel like. He's one of the best. I think he's the best safety in his league. Like, not even close. I think he's the best safety in his league, and it's not even close. So anytime you can have somebody that go down, and I view him that highly, you know, it'll definitely hurt any defense or any team. But we also have some players, you know, that's played a lot of ball in this league, from Adrian Phillips, and we got Rayshon Jenkins, Jalen Watkins. We got some guys that played a lot of ball in this league. So we got some guys that can pick up the slack, and we got to move on. And hopefully he can, you know, we'll have him back towards the end of the year.
He led the league in interceptions in 2016, a two-time Pro Bowler, a two-time All-Pro. He is locked in. Casey Hayward, my guest. Casey, great job. Really nice to have you on the show. Thank you very much. Appreciate you doing it.
Thank you for having me.
That was good. That was great, Casey. Nice job. Let's go to Wichita. Drizzle. Drizzle, what's up?
Yo, what's happening with you, Romy? Rome, how you living, man?
Good, good. Dude, how about you?
Yo, man, I can't complain. You know what I'm sizzling? But, yo, man, I'm about to kill the hopes and dreams of all these Faker fans right quick. Y'all beat the Donkeys, the same Donkeys who haven't been relevant since Peyton Manning retired. This Donkeys team features Joe Flacco. This ain't 2013 Joe Flacco, the same 2013 guy who was doing badass stuff like making Super Bowl predictions and then throwing for 300 yards in every playoff game. Y'all got 2019 replaced by a rookie saying stuff like, I'm focused on our team and I'm happy to be here, Sofford and Cool Whip Flacco. Wait till y'all play the Chiefs and your facade will get exposed by Patrick Mahomes, who's going to shred that defense like a Rambo rampage. But hey, if my team won 4 games last year, I'd celebrate beating anyone too, even if the Donkeys are as good as a migraine. Now, what's my name? I'm out, Rome.
Drizzle. Wichita. You know what? I'll give it to him. Give him that golden ticket.
I've got a golden ticket. I've got a golden ticket.
Drizzle in Wichita ripping a golden ticket for the 2020 Smack Off sometime next summer.
Good night.